Welcome to this next episode of the Renegade HPG. My guest today is Nicholas Smith, president of the Virtual World Entertainment, steward of the infamous BattleTech Center's virtual immersive BattleTech opportunities for those who are lucky enough to kind of find one of those centers. And Nicholas and I are going to be chatting about obviously the virtual world and BattleTech centers today, but also, pull Nicholas' insight into kind of BattleTech history, because he's been involved with it, from the early days. And so, Nicholas, thank you for joining me today.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks for bringing me along. It should be fun.
Yeah, definitely. And for those listening, this is our first chance kind of connecting and talking. So, I'll be getting to know Nicholas as you guys do as we go along. But you've been there, for a long time, Nicholas, and it's been interesting kind of talking through, the early history, whether it's through the authors, through Bob Charette or Mike Stackpole, or talking with Michael Todd, who's done a lot of research into kind of the history of BattleTech with his little sort of documentary of unseen written documentary for the BattleTech history. But it's been interesting to kind of listen to how Jordan's focus on kind of developing the BattleTech centers, interacted and melded with the development of the BattleTech universe, and for those that hadn't caught that Mike Stackpole interview, we were talking about kind of, the development of OmniMech technology and kind of how the computer requirements of the BattleTech centers were kind of driving that idea. And let's start a little bit with how you first got connected, with Virtual World and the BattleTech centers, and kind of what it was like in those early days, just kind of coming up with this idea and kind of trying to bring it to fruition.
Sure. Well, I mean, and I have to make sure we've got the record straight as far as when I came into this. So, mm-hmm. Thrilled to be here and tell our story. And, my story is a lot like a lot of other people. And that is, I was a big fan, in the late 80s, early 90s. I was, not really a gamer per se, but I loved computer games. Mm-hmm. And my most favorite computer game that existed was the original MechWarrior. And at that time, me and all the other kids in the neighborhood, every month or so, we'd get that issue of Nintendo Power. And lo and behold, one of the early issues had this contest where you could go to the BattleTech Center in Chicago and actually get in this mech simulator. And the whole idea of a head-to-head video game made our head explode. And even more so that this was like these military flight simulators. You had all of these controls and all this capability. This was unobtainium to, a kid in the suburbs in West Michigan.
Yeah.
It was hard. It was hard not to get excited about that, and knowing Chicago was only 2 hours away. I'm going to get there soon. And it was just a few years later that I went there in high school. In fact, my very first mission sheet, I think, is back there. December 9th, 1992. Awesome. I made it out the North Pier Mall at that time. Third floor, and just absolutely fell in love. And from that moment, since then, I've always been heavily invested into the idea of BattleTech and Virtual World. And I was more into the environment and the theatrics than maybe necessarily the game itself. Mm-hmm. But it was just amazing. There was absolutely nothing like it.
Yeah, it's incredible just how many different vectors people come into the BattleTech universe. For me, I started with the tabletop, but it's very much the novels and the lore that is what kind of married me to kind of BattleTech, and people just, between video games, whether it's the original MechWarrior, whether it's MechWarrior 2, and MechWarrior 2 was kind of where I spent most of my time, because MechWarrior 1 just wasn't accessible because we didn't have the computer at the time, but of course I got back and play it. But that was a fun game, and I miss that kind of combination of kind of, a kind of storytelling and kind of adventure with the mech combat. You know, would love to see, you know, get into that again. I've told a couple of people it's dangerous for me to dive into the video game world because everything else tends to get set aside. So I kind of approach the things like HBS BattleTech with a bit of caution. But you know, I'll free up some time eventually to kind of get into it. So how did you kind of transfer from this young fan and kind of getting an official connection with the company?
Well, blind luck, you know, yeah. Truth be told, you know, in the early days of the internet. So I was a BBSer back in the day, you know, showing a little bit of my old man cred. Mm-hmm. So first off, you know, I can't tell my BattleTech story without, you know, giving credit to my friend Jason Randall, mm-hmm. the guy who introduced the BattleTech and MechWarrior. He was also the guy whose computer I played on to play the original you know, MechWarrior game, as well as Crescent Hawks. And, awesome. You know, he always tried to get me into, you know, the other tabletop and RPG game. And I, you know, I never really took the bait. But as years went on, you know, I'd back and forth to the BattleTech Center, made friends in Chicago, you know, with some of the employees there. And in those early years, I was also a BBSer. So pre-internet, you know, I was, you know, kind of an old fart, I guess. You know, was really into that, you know, the social scene online before, you know, what we know as the internet today. And when the BattleTech Center and the virtual world centers were upgrading to the newer generation cockpits, the old cockpits seemed to just disappear. At least it did from the outsider perspective. Mm-hmm. And so I'd always kind of kept an eye on Usenet. It was one of those things that about every month or two, I would do a random keyword search for BattleTech pods or virtual world pods. And out of the blue, one day, there was a post from a guy by the name, I believe is Gordon Keniston. I think that might be his name. At a place called Fightertown, USA in Irvine, California, or Lake Forest, California. And he's like, hey, we have a bunch of old BattleTech pods that don't work that we need to get rid of. You know, here's the price, come get them. And my head exploded because I actually caught this post within hours, maybe yeah. of it going up. And I thought, oh, this is going to be a heck of a competition. Yeah. I live in Michigan. These are in California. But I'm a little nutty about winning the race.
Yeah.
So I talked to the guy, you know, he told me a little bit about what they had. They actually had like 18 to 20 of these old cockpits. He said he's not guaranteeing anything works. And in my head, I'm like, well, I want one, but yeah. I'll buy four, sell the three to pay for the one. So, right. You know, always trying to be, you know, have the hobby cover itself.
Yep.
And so I wanted the Martian Bell pod. And anybody that, you know, is within, you know, the virtual world lore knows that, you know, the Martian Bell pod is the one. In fact, out of this frame, there's actually, you know, Martian Bell door signed by Edward James Olmos. Oh, and nice. So made a deal with a guy. I was on a plane within about 3 days, flew out California, met him at Fightertown, and, you know, I bought four cockpits, actually five. I won't bore you to tears with, you know, the logistical nightmare we went through at that time to bring them home. But the long and short of it is I drove a truck home with five of them in the back and, you know, loaded them in my two rented garages at my apartment complex. And I really didn't know what to do from that point. But, you know, being a computer nerd and a tinkerer, I'm looking in like, wow, these are pretty complete. You know, I grabbed a lot of spare parts and stuff that I could get from the set, you know, that was in California. And I had connected with Chris Chapman, Uncle Lynx. And, you know, Chris Chapman, who actually just so happens to live a few hours north of me, he's, you know, up in Grand Rapids, Michigan. You know, he started asking me questions. Well, do you have this? Well, yeah. Do you have this? Well, yeah, I think I have that. Well, you've got everything you need to fire them up. Okay. So I, you know, wired up the power and lo and behold, they pooped.
And then the next week of your life disappeared, right? Because you got lost in the pod.
I wish I had digital camera back then because you've got two rented apartment garages with light sockets. So I've tapped into the power into the light sockets to try to power up cockpits. Oh, my apartment's on the third floor across the street. So I ran extension cords out of my balcony across the parking lot into the garages to give me a little bit more power. And, you know, so he explained to me a little bit of the relationship between the cockpits and how the network works. They were ARPANET based. You know, and me being a kind of a former pseudo network engineer and I, you know, IT guy, okay, most of this made sense. This wasn't completely archaic technology yet. But then there was the part where you had to have the console. And I'm not really a Mac guy, but they were on these old, you know, Mac centrist systems. And I was missing the key piece. And it was, you know, you might, you know, in the circle, you might hear people talk about the AROS board or the ARCNET board in the Apple. And this, you know, if I can find one of these, I have working cockpits. So, you know, at you know, relatively short order, I had four cockpits ready to receive a boot, and I just needed this card. And through some good social networking and blind luck, I got an email from Al Emerson, the former, I believe, director of technology at Virtual World, Scarab. And I remember the email. This was back in 1999. I remember the email like it was yesterday. It was, "Hey, Propwash, good fortune smiles upon thee." I mean, this is how this email started. He Virtual World, at that time, you know, owned by Jim Garbarini, they found an old ARPANET board for me. And, you know, at that point, it got him up and running. And, you know, I like to steal the phrase from Randall Bills. I became a little bit nerd famous for about 5 minutes. So, you know, I kind of won the race.
Yeah.
You know, I was one of the first people to get them in private hands and up and running. And then you know, that then, well, now what? And so that's really kind of how my story started.
Awesome.
We had them up and running. We moved them from the apartment garage to a game store down the road from me, a place called Game Shop. And word got out that there's this place in Kalamazoo that was running these old vintage 3.0 BattleTech cockpits. And in no time, we had people traveling from Chicago to Kalamazoo to this little game, hole-in-a-wall game shop to come play the pods again, this vintage pods again.
Awesome.
And I, you know, became heavily invested in the community. I now, you know, kind of had something to do, something interesting, a place to contribute there. And, you know, it all started in 1999.
Awesome. So do you know what ever happened to those other, 13 pods? You said there was 18 in the store?
Yeah. There was another group of enthusiasts down in San Diego. They were a group that they became known as Vintage VR. Mm-hmm. They ended up getting the rest of the cockpits from Fighter Town, and it took them a while to find the, you know, their own ARCNET card. I ended up with two for a while, and they ended up finding a source for one not too far later. In fact, they had a really great invitational down there in San Diego, and I flew out to that. So this was the beginning of kind of the real moment, now the collector's generation, if you will. You know, we're starting to tell our own story, while Virtual World was still, you know, fully functional. In operating cockpits at Dave & Buster's and other kind of revenue share arrangements. And I mean, it's been a riot ever since. Later I would, you know, move to a property where I was able to build a fully kind of fleshed out pod bay, fully themed with a lot of, you know, collectible stuff that I had acquired over the years. And I would run events out of there, you know, always tried to, you know, out of my house, pretty much ran them for free. We certainly took donations, but I always tried to have the philosophy that, you know, if you can't afford it, you can still play. You know, we don't want anybody ever turned away because, you know, they can't, you know, pay some silly fee to play the game at my house.
Right.
So we peaked at some point. We had six 3.0 cockpits running at my house. And we had Red Planet Martian football leagues, and we were playing 3-on-3 Martian football. And we had to divide it up into two different divisions of the league. We had too many people that would come out. I had 50 plus people at my house every Friday. So we had to stagger the groups to be every other Friday. I mean, we had groups coming in from Detroit every other week, you know, to be a part of our Martian football leagues.
And what What were the differences between the pods that you got and I guess whatever the next generation was that they were putting out? You know, was it noticeable or was it?
Oh, it was technology wise, it was really significant. So the 3.0 cockpits that I was running, sometimes people call those the coffin cockpits. So you know, if you've watched the Lost Tech video, you'll hear a lot about when they went to the shaded poly generation. And these, you know, all the internal readouts were LED, and you had, you know, one color main screen, about 25-inch monitor, and then you had a 13-inch, you know, secondary radar screen, and everything else was LEDs and physical buttons. And of course, you know, pretty rudimentary, you know, shaded polys. And, you know, when the games got really intense, right, you're getting down to maybe, you know, 3 to 6 frames per second when you're moving at high speed, you know, depending on the game and the environment. And then when you go to the Tesla system, that is, got a big blueprint behind me. I could probably pull it up. It's the big plastic pill, the round looking cockpits that those are the ones that have the infinity optics with the concave mirror and the beam splitter and the actual green multifunction displays. So
and are those just
pretty big change?
Yeah. Are those just in Chicago now, the newer ones? Or are they spread out? Are those Dave and Buster's, you know, kind of a game?
At this point in history, you know, up until 2005, those were almost exclusively at Dave and Buster's. There were a couple other, you know, licensees and revenue share arrangements, but Dave and Buster's was the big fish in that one.
And what's, you know, in terms of take us maybe through the origin of your, you know, your time with Virtual World and kind of how that kind of evolved and maybe kind of where we get from, you know, your house and 50 person tournaments, you know, to kind of where we are now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was always community centric. You know, I tried to stay involved, you know, not only in what was going on in the virtual world space, but, you know, had relationships with people that were involved in the Xbox game and the PC game. Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, relationship with, you know, at that time, FanPro and later, you know, Catalyst Game Labs. And, you know, in the different, you know, projects and stuff Jordan was working on as well, you know, I tried to kind of be in the orbit. You know, they weren't real formal relationships, but, you know, Battletech is still a pretty niche market. You know, everybody's always been very cooperative. You know, it very is kind of like a family-oriented IP for the most part. And, you know, but of course, you know, Virtual World was my place. And I developed what I believe was a pretty good relationship with Virtual World and you know, the principals there at that time. Of course, Jim Garbarini, which was the owner who, you know, I consider a mentor. You know, I never had a chance to work with him a whole lot, but he's an absolutely phenomenal guy. You know, he's got his newer company that they do a lot of VR work, Hidden Path Entertainment. And, you know, Al Emerson and Mike Lorenz at Virtual World at that time, you know, I would consider pretty good friends. And then of course, you know, everybody else in that, you know, Virtual World was a pretty small company. So at that point, Paul Tierney had left. Anne Marie was still there. Isis and Anna was, you know, around a little bit later. So I would come into the offices, I would, you know, buy merchandise, you know, just hang out. They were just so supportive and they were just so great to me. And, you know, I would travel around when the different invitationals would pop up at different Dave & Buster's at that time. And in 2005, you know, Dave & Buster's decided to move on. They decided to terminate the arrangement with Virtual World. And for Jim and the team, it just really didn't make sense at that time to bring all of the revenue share cockpits back and then try to come up with a new contract arrangement with somebody or sell them in kind of a retail fashion. You know, they really got a lot of value out of those and it was time for them to move on. So I had, you know, kind of early insight into this new reality and, you know, I just kind of, hey, Jim, would you be interested in selling me the company?
Yeah.
And, you know, I made an offer that I thought he would laugh at. He was quite supportive and we were able to make a deal. And So I bought it in 2005. We made the deal in, I think, the summer of 2005, and then we announced what we were doing later, November, December. And at that point in time, I hate using the word fanboy. It's almost offensive. But like every fanboy, I thought I was going to bring the second coming of a virtual world. You know, the glory days are coming back, and I'm going to do it. And, you know, the reality bat swings swift and hard. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had no idea what I was talking about. And so I had to pivot, you know, very quickly. Some things changed. When I bought the company, there were a couple other, there was another revenue arrangement that I was kind of inheriting, and they immediately, they were selling the property. They were not going to continue. And I accidentally kind of left them out of, a serious financial commitment that I didn't realize that they had made. So I had to pivot.
Yeah.
And, so I decided to, I still had a day job. I didn't buy Virtual World thinking that this was going to pay my bills. And, I saw the reality of, what I was up against. I'm not a software developer. I don't have a, building full of money to, risk, recreating a whole new product. I had ideas, but, I just lacked the experience and the insight to do that well. And so I thought, what I really love doing is having people play. I love creating the environment. I like overcoming some of the challenges to, bring people into our world and show them something they still have never seen before. It's still completely unique. There's still nothing out there in the market, anything like the Battletech cockpits. So in 2007-ish, it would have been a little bit later than that. But 2008, 2009, I started tinkering with the cockpits on making them mobile. And to anybody that ever worked on them knows that this seemed like a fool's errand, because the cockpits before, to disassemble and reassemble, each cockpit took about 3 hours to do correctly.
Okay.
And on top of the 3 hours, you always broke stuff. Like these things were just not made to be disassembled and moved more than once. So there was a lot of really interesting, engineering and logistical challenges to work out. How can we make them portable? How can we make them so they fit through doorways that, because they're a little bit too tall? Mm-hmm. How can we make it so we can minimize the, hassle of getting it from A to B and back? And so, being a little bit of a continuous improvement Kaizen nerd, we iterated. And we got to the point, I'm happy to say, that me and Aaron Joswiak successfully could unload or load 6 cockpits into a 26-foot straight truck with a lift in 22 minutes.
Holy cow. Okay. That's an improvement.
And, and they're 1,000-pound cockpits moving in one piece. But we got very good at it. We developed good techniques. We engineered, eventually, it took a while, good platforms to move them around. And it's absolutely astounding. I mean, if you watch, Jeff Perry, Ghost Hawk, who kind of took over, my mobile operations after we started doing conventions a few years ago, he kind of took it over when I moved on from that. I think he can fully deploy a set of, 14 cockpits, 2 truckloads of cockpits from truck to running in under an hour.
Wow. Okay. That's awesome. And so, let's leverage that into kind of how people can find it and how people can kind of play them right now.
Well, thanks to our friend COVID, getting to them right now is a much bigger challenge.
Yeah. Maybe we'll say right now, maybe in February or hopefully in the near future.
By next summer. Hopefully, there'll be conventions, and there's a couple different groups that are touring, that tour around, with their cockpits. So, we all play in the same sandbox. Our ownership community is extremely tight. And that is, we curated that community. And so we've got what we usually call the Mech Jock group out of Michigan, out of Grand Rapids. Jeff runs that crew now, and he's usually hitting Origins and Gen Con and MagFest. I think he did 4, 5, 6 events, you know, per year, maybe even more. And then we've got the group out of Minneapolis, usually known as the, you know, FSA group. They used to operate a public site in Minneapolis. They are now moving it back to a private arrangement. They still tour around a little bit, and they can be, you know, all these people can be found on Facebook, and we try to update information at mechjock.com, which I'm not the best at that, but we try. And so they will be certainly promoting semi-private open events, you know, I think once COVID passes. And then you have really the only real commercial operator right now, and that is MetCor in Houston. Yeah. In fact, they've now just started partnering with another family entertainment center owner, and they've got their cockpits there. And I'm told it's actually a really cool site. And they also travel, so they are most well known for, they're the ones at Dragon Con every year. And they hit quite a few other events off and on down kind of in the south, you know, between Texas and Florida.
Yeah.
And there's also Craig Evans, who operates some in Denver, Colorado. He's been an owner off and on for a long time. He's kind of been my go-to technical guy. And he has a great YouTube channel that actually talks about doing the restoration and setup of Tesla cockpits.
Oh, wow.
I know he is likely to, you know, develop a local player community that'll be able to come play those there. We have a set in New York. You know, another set has gone back to New York. There's somebody trying to put together a little bit of a, like a game club. Okay. I would describe it as a game club maker space. He is not up and running yet, but I know he's trying to get there. And then there's, I think those are the only ones that are really semi-public facing anymore.
Okay.
There are quite a few private owners where they're either in storage or they're at their house. But I do maintain a list, a public list. I think it's podtracker.battletech.com.
Okay.
Is a little, just a Google spreadsheet that we just try to keep updated so we don't lose track of where they're at, and is a little bit of the, you know, arbiter of truth to the public as to where these things are at. So
now did one of them survive in your basement, or are they all cleared out of the house now? Do you got to go to work to play?
None of them are at my house anymore. I moved to the burbs. You know, I actually used to have a couple in my house, mm-hmm. and then I got married, and the,
yeah.
pinball, and the pinball machine and the cockpits had to not be in the dining room.
Yeah.
And now that I've moved to the burbs, they're not, I don't even have a little building out back. Now we store them up in Grand Rapids.
Gotcha. Awesome. So I'm looking at, you know, behind you, kind of some of the artwork. Is that on your, over your left shoulder? Is that from the BattleTech Centers? You know, I haven't seen that one before.
They are actually. So these are kind of two of the original posters, going back, I think, to the 3.0 era, both the Red Planet and the BattleTech one.
Yeah, yeah.
And then immediately behind me, if I move out of the way, those are actually custom art. These used to be in the offices at Virtual World. So.
Wonderful.
These are little one-offs that were on display in somebody important's office at some point in time.
Very cool. And everyone wants to know where the source of that Mad Cat is. Tell us about the Mad Cat.
Well, that Mad Cat was actually the one in the lobby at the BattleTech Center in Chicago.
Awesome.
And later, you know, most sites had one of those. And then over this side, a little bit out of camera view, mm-hmm. is, I can actually turn it, I guess, the power of the internet.
Yeah, right.
is a prototype, okay. model of a VTV. And that is from the Red Planet game.
Gotcha.
Each store had a big, you know, 3D model, either Mad Cat and a VTV. This particular one, is different than all the rest. So this was a prototype, kind of a nicer, newer generation one, that was gifted to me through Al Emerson and Brian Mikulski, POCUS. So
awesome.
Amazingly, these things did not get lost, you know, through all of the transition and movement. But this one, if you ever went to Day One Studios, back when they were developing MechAssault, this was also in the lobby of Day One Studios.
Very, very cool. And so, through your association now with the pods now, how much have you kind of learned about kind of those early days in the history and the development of it? Can you give us a little kind of history, maybe to supplement and I'll definitely be linking this, the link to Lost Tech, which is a very good documentary kind of following the kind of evolution of the virtual centers. But maybe, here now, if you can kind of give us maybe a little bit of development history lesson, I know, one of my most fun trivia, which I had kind of mentioned earlier, was that how the pods were essentially the inspiration for the OmniMech technology, any other kind of cool, maybe insights you can kind of share with us, that you've kind of gleaned through your more official relationship with the company?
Well, the one you just told, the genesis of the OmniMechs was one that I told often. Mm-hmm. And, me being kind of a, unknown entity or a nobody, in the canon of BattleTech history, a lot of people didn't believe it. And, okay. I would often tell stories about, how, what I had heard. Mm-hmm. Right. That according to the lore of Virtual World, that, Jordan and Ross, being students at the Merchant Marine Academy, that they were fascinated by, the very high end simulators available at that time for the Merchant Marines. And, yeah. We're talking about 1979, 1980 timeframe. And, I think this was kind of the dream to do a simulator. And, somewhere along the line, we can't quite do that yet. Let's do these other things. Mm-hmm. And Jordan is just an incredibly creative guy. And, he and Ross, just put together some amazing, board games and expansions to those games, to get rich quick to hopefully fund the cockpit idea.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes I also talk about the laser tag rifles. I don't have them in the room right now. But there's these ESP laser rifles that I have that I often like, hey, BattleTech also exists because of these, and this was a project they had worked on for their, company ESP, again, to pay the bills, to keep working on this simulation project. So, when we watch Lost Tech, you finally hear that story that we've been trying to tell for years. And the magic in Lost Tech is I'm not the guy telling you. I have no credibility on this story. I wasn't there. But boy, when you get, Jordan and Mort and Ross Babcock in one call telling the story, mm-hmm. Now those Wikipedia pages can be updated and maybe, they'll be left alone.
Yeah, yeah. Very cool. Yeah, well, hopefully I can connect with Jordan and Ross at some point for the podcast. I definitely, love to talk with them. Rumor has it, through Bobby, that you've fallen to a little Lost Tech cash yourself, when FOSSA closed down and Ross kind of, passed along to you a lot of the, the almost like, Raiders of the Lost Ark storehouse of BattleTech products, any kind of treasures that kind of came out of that find?
Oh yeah. So a little bit of backstory on that. Along with being, a guy that became a little bit nerd famous with getting the cockpits up and running. So of course, people in the former Virtual World sphere or FOSSA sphere, mm-hmm. I kind of, became a little bit known to them as well. And, at 1100 West Cermak, of course, that's where FOSSA was, but Virtual World also had a warehouse there in the basement. So well after, everybody went off to Seattle, to work for Microsoft, but, Virtual World was still here and Ross was still kind of, closing out what was left after, WizKids started producing, the newer products. So just through happenstance, I had, was connected to Ross to, hey, I'm kind of a collector and I know other people that are collectors of big things. And I know how to deal with the logistics of big things, right? getting rid of a warehouse of stuff is an enormous pain in the butt. And certainly, you know, it seems unlikely Ross wants 500 or 600 random people coming out to visit Leavenworth West Cermak to go through stuff and buy stuff. So I tried to help. You know, I tried to help find buyers and people interested in very large display items, you know, things like, you know, there's the full size elemental suit. They were these giant game tables that were constructed for Gen Con and large events like that for BattleTech and Shadowrun and a few other things. And so again, being a guy with time to burn and could drive a big truck, I tried to, you know, get these things in the hands of other fans. You know, we could have gone the eBay route or things like that, but we just, hey, who do we know, you know, that can just make this go away? And, you know, I always believed that, you know, Ross and everybody associated with this, you know, really wanted these to go to good homes. You know, this was their legacy. And, you know, these are people that care. And I really cared. I don't know why, but I did. You know, I know what it felt like knowing somebody just, you know, like the old BattleTech pods, they were trashed. They were thrown out. Like generation one, like nothing of those other, maybe a couple little panels exist. And it seems to be such a shame now looking back that what we wouldn't give to have those back just for posterity. So, you know, I really took that to heart, tried to find homes for a lot of this stuff. And then when they were done, you know, everything was done and Ross and everybody was done with 1100 West Cermak. We still had the storage space in the basement there. And there was a lot of stuff there that I was interested in as a collector. But they, you know, like, well, no, we're going to give that to somebody else. So that's going somewhere else. Okay, I respect that. Well, one day I get a call out of the blue from the building manager, the building owner. Hey, come get this stuff. What are you talking about? Well, all the stuff is still up here. Someone was supposed to come pick it up and they didn't. Like, well, and this is like a year after, you know, since I'd been there. And, well, that's not my stuff. Well, do you want it? Well, what do you mean? Do you want it? Because well, we have these pallets of the stuff we've got to get rid of. Do you want to come get rid of it? We know you've got a truck, you know, a 26-foot straight truck, right? And no, I can't come take that because it wasn't given to me. Like I no. He goes, well, I'm taking it out to the dumpster. I said, you tell me when it's down by the dumpster. And then, you know, if you get to that point, then maybe I'll come make some of it disappear. And and that's really what happened. I mean, I really wanted to, you know, honor the spirit of the agreement where, you know, this was meant to go to somebody else, but they were going into the dumpster. And so I just, instead of, you know, I took them literally off of, like literally sitting next to the dumpster, I put them in my truck and I darn near filled a 26-foot straight truck.
Holy cow, that's incredible.
So, you know, being probably way overweight, you know, because it was mostly paper, I brought it back, you know, to Kalamazoo. And, you know, there was, it was just a lot of manuscripts and paper. I mean, there was interesting stuff, you know, and I think realistically, all of it could have found a home. But the logistics of it, like I didn't have a spare warehouse on my house. This stuff filled my garage and I wanted my garage back. So I would go online, just, you know, I remember going into a Shadowrun forum and saying, hey, here's what I got. You want it? Come get it. Just come get it. And I remember like a couple people just like, nah, this is a scam. This is BS, blah, blah, blah. Like, and really kind of trash. Okay. I mean, I don't know what else to do. And then one guy's like, hey, I'm driving up from Ohio. I'm gonna bring my Honda Pilot. And it was, well, I will see what you got. I'm like, okay, great. What, take all you can fit. And he showed up and his eyes like fell out of his face. He goes, you really weren't kidding. I'm like, no, I really wasn't. He goes, you really don't want anything for any of this? No. So he packed his little Honda Pilot, like riding on the bump stops on his axle. And it was, just giggling inside, because you know how people are so jaded on the internet and don't believe sometimes a good thing can be true.
Yeah.
And I got such a kick out of that moment. I said, you know, could you just do one thing? Just go back in that forum and show the picture. Tell them what you saw. And all of a sudden, will you send me these boxes? I'm like, there's a big bonfire out back. That's where a lot of it ended up.
Oh, man. You know, tell me about that elemental suit. Where did the elemental suit end up? Because
I ended up with it for a few years. So I would take it to Gen Con and set it up in the Fan Pro or the Catalyst booth every now and then just for fun. I was coming up with cockpits and I had a parts trailer. So we just loaded the dang thing to parts trailer, which took up almost the whole trailer. I ended up getting it painted, you know, because it was just kind of like a green and white simplistic spray paint job.
Okay.
And I ended up finding an artist that I worked with, the guy that did airbrush art, and I commissioned him to paint it similar to a piece of art that I saw in a BattleTech novel or in one of the TROs. And so it was a awesome Jade Falcon paint job.
Yeah.
And once we got to the end of it and I paid him and I'm realizing, why the heck did I do that? But it was a neat display piece.
Yeah.
And then eventually I actually just gave it to Catalyst Games. You know, they were always showing up to Gen Con with truck upon truck load of stuff. Like, you know what? This takes up too much space. Looks great in your booth. Yeah. You guys can have it. And gave it to Catalyst, and I think there was a warehouse accident not long after that.
Huh.
I think the full-size elemental suit met its match.
Maybe got crushed. Do you have any pictures of it with the paintbrush? Awesome. Well, send that to me, and I'll post it up on the screen as a little overlay people can check out.
Yeah, I definitely have pictures of it. I've got pictures of the old pod bay, so I'll send you some of those.
Awesome. Yeah, any of these pictures I'll kind of do as a little overlays as we go. So other than the elemental suit, any artwork in particular that came out of that?
Oh, yes. Okay. Over the years, you know, certainly the bulk of it, you know, things were just document boxes of manuscripts or documents or, you know, photocopied art. You know, back then, right, all of the production they did in-house was all of the old manual, you know, legit cut and paste. And, you know, there's some other goodies in there, but I went through the things pretty well. And I did end up with, surprisingly, some of the original hand-drawn battle droids mechs themselves.
Wow.
So, you know, not only do I, you know, have some of what I believe to be the original hand-drawn, pencil-drawn on the sepia paper mechs that were used in production in the battle droids era, I also believe I've got some of the rejects. So I think I've got some that were going to be battle droids that never saw the light of day. And, you know, some of those are my most favorite pieces. I've taken them to different conventions, shown, you know, Jordan and Randall and anybody that I can. And memories are always a little bit fuzzy. So, you know, I always try to be real careful about, like, well, I'm pretty sure it's this, but no one actually remembers. I do remember I had a folder that I think might have even been in a desk that Stackpole had used. And some handwritten notes at that time, a little bit about the clans. So I think it was kind of the genesis of people spitballing what the clans are and where they're coming from. And so I've got some pieces like that. But probably some of my favorite ones are actually the camo specs. I had most of the original source art for that little camo specs book that they released. I think I had a Battlemaster on the cover. I had almost that entire book, and I did end up selling quite a few of them. In fact, one guy bought most of them, but I did keep a few favorites. So I still have the Warhammer, and I think the Battlemaster, and you know, because the Warhammer was the Black Widow art, and of course, like having the original of that is pretty darn cool. So I still have that.
Awesome. Well, maybe, if you're ever running out of space again, I know Bobby is trying to kind of start up that Battletech Museum. That would definitely be a good home, between any of those collections
I've spoken with him, and, that's a little bit of, when we talk about virtual world and what I'm doing with it now.
Yeah.
And it's really that where we're trying to go is what I'm thinking about most of the time when I talk about virtual world.
Yeah.
So doing the Lost video, right, was us telling the story of virtual world, putting together a lot of the pieces of, not only how important virtual world was in the Battletech Center was to Battletech, which is a real niche thing, but actually that group and that team and that people was massively influential on where the entire gaming industry went. And a lot of people that were on that worked for Fossa Interactive and Virtual Entertainment Group, they would go to Microsoft. They would be that launch team for Xbox Live and MechAssault. There's some, nuanced ways that, Xbox Live being the first major service, right, that did the head-to-head gaming through the consoles, and you had gamer tags and you had achievements. Well, so much of this is a callback to virtual world, putting your name on the cockpit and you getting the printout of the narrative, your story, and your name in lights. And look at these great things you did. Being the hero of your own story is so incredibly popular, and being able to have that social shared experience is so incredibly powerful that, that team brought it to the world through Xbox Live. And then, that team then would go out and develop other, incredibly influential products that would then borrow parts from Red Planet. They would borrow parts from Battletech. They would borrow parts of the social experience or the interactive narrative. And so phase one, right, is, man, people should know how important virtual world was to gaming, not just to Battletech, but to everything in gaming. Now, so quite a few of us have been pretty passionate about protecting and preserving the cockpits and the technology.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can tell the story of why they're important, maybe we can get people invested in to see that, wait, these cockpits are still around. This is worth saving. And so, curating our little owner community over the years, the little bit of control I have is the licensing and the software. So if we can keep everybody kind of supporting that broader community and hopefully have fun doing it, but dispense with this idea that it's going to be some giant moneymaker, but hey, let's do a cool thing and have some fun and try to support this broader mission of keeping them flying. And if we can keep them flying long enough and protect them and keep them together, keep them accessible so they don't become the proverbial lost tech themselves,
right,
that at some point we have at least the ability, we were pragmatic enough to say, all right, well, we are going to bring them back together, bring the collection back together, fully running set, and maybe they will find a place in a legitimate museum.
Yeah.
So we know we can't get there unless we walk this journey, right? So Lost Tech was the first part starting to tell the story, and Lost Tech's not done. There's more parts coming.
Awesome.
It's a three-part narrative.
Okay.
You saw the first one.
Yep.
So now we're getting the word out there. You and I are having this conversation.
Yep.
People are getting a little bit more educated. Hopefully they find it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now we see the importance, and maybe people will see the value in preserving them, and then we will get it together, do a full restoration, and get them in a museum and tell the story the way it really should be told.
Definitely.
Boy, I wish I could cite it right now. I'll have to email it to you. When we were getting ready to release Lost Tech, and I remember discovering this on my birthday back in August, there was a website out there where an enthusiast just did the research and really kind of dug up the history of what virtual world's been up to for the last 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was astounding because you know, hear all of these professional bloggers and writers and, you know, have that did absolutely zero research, like this person who kind of our inner circle, nobody knew.
Yeah.
And he had it almost completely correct.
Well, was that?
He had pictures of my pod bay from my house.
Was that Michael? Michael Todd?
Knew the story.
Who did that? Michael, who I talked about before, he did that long history. And I know Virtual World was a big part of his document, Unseen, in that.
I'm going to I'll have to look for it offline. But anyway, the website, you know, that he was on was a kind of like an retro arcade website. Okay.
Yeah.
And I reached out to him, and I think I might be doing a recording, with him at some point to tell a little bit of that story too. Cause he didn't know we were doing Lost Tech.
Yeah.
And so when he went and saw Lost Tech, his head exploded because not only did he get a lot of stuff right that no one else had ever really talked about.
Yeah.
But, you know, we really filled in the cracks.
Well, it's interesting just trying to kind of, you know, find that pulse of the community to get the information out. And just for me, you know, it's been a ton of fun with this project with Renegade HPG and trying to kind of just connect with as many people as I can, you know, who've been involved with BattleTech throughout its history and have those insights into kind of, you know, what happened in the early days and up until now. And I know there's somewhere, you know, I'll post it and I'm like, oh man, I just talked with, you know, Bob Charette, you know, for an hour and a half. People are going to jump all over this and it'll get like a couple hundred views. Whereas, you know, somebody's gameplay video has got like 12,000 views. And I'm like, oh man, I'm doing something wrong here. Cause there's gotta be more people that are interested in this, but it's interesting. It's just, you know, it's, you know, whether the videos are getting shared, you know, through YouTube or not. I think it's more like if the people who do watch it, if they share it on their social media, it makes a big difference. But fortunately it's up there forever. You know, our conversation, all those other conversations. And so, you know, when people do have that search, once it's out there, you know, even if it's 6-7 years later, it'll pop up, you know, cause as anyone who, you know, travels YouTube a lot, you know, you get lots of recommended totally random videos that are 7-8 years old. Yeah. And you're like, where did this come from? Well,
there's pictures from my house that randomly show up on BattleTech. You know, we talk about BattleTech pods, right? There's one, there's a picture that I took of a 3-0 cockpit split.
Okay.
And the front and back next to each other. It's the only way you could ever actually see it. And, you know, it's the only picture I like that I think that exists.
Yeah.
And it's so funny how often my picture in my garage shows up on random websites and, you know, rarely the correct attribution. But I hear you. You know, I know it seems like the BattleTech community, who seems to have an insatiable thirst for new information and new product. The rubber rarely seems to meet the road on that. And I think Piranha Games has learned that lesson a little bit, you know, learning that, you know, MechWarrior really is a true niche market. Like MechWarrior 2 is often credited for like being this huge release and, you know, so many copies sold.
Yeah.
Well, people don't realize it was bundled because of, you know, the new, you know, 3DFX cards that would come later when they started doing the more fancy texture mapping. That drew the numbers huge. Not that it wasn't immensely successful in the market. It was.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes because it's relative position in the market then, thinking that, well, it would have a similar mind share today, relative mind share today. And that's just not reality.
Well, I think there's just so many options now, you know, and even in the viewership, you know, if I post a video on Facebook of Bob Charette, you know, it's not like, you know, all 8,000 members of that group are actually, you know, visiting the Facebook page every day, you know? And so I think there's a sense of humility to it and patience. I think it does take time before that stuff kind of catches on, but people will find it in time if they're interested. And certainly, you know, I think if the community grows that, you know, people will find it. But it's interesting, you know, I've made comments about BattleTech on my Facebook page, and, you know, I have a lot of gaming friends that are connected on there, and they're like, oh, is that from the old MechWarrior game that I played? And it's funny, you know, because there are just some people where that's their contact and they don't know that there's anything kind of beyond that.
Right.
But I think that's, That's the struggle with BattleTech, and I have had a conversation with my local game store owner when the intro box came out last year about getting it, and I was just saying, is there a community, and asking about kind of his perception of BattleTech, and his comments just was that there's not a lot of marketing for it, and I think that Catalyst perhaps just relies on that word of mouth, but from the game store owner's perspective, they're like, yeah, I mean, there's interest in the game, but we're not sending any materials or whatnot to kind of put it out. And I kind of bemoan that, because as you kind of see in the background over my shoulder there, that's one of the old like game store promo posters. Yeah. And even something just like, get some amazing artists and put it up, and and not even just kind of a mech shooting, but something like that old Boris Vallejo art or something like that, or Jeff Lovenstein, art that kind of mixes a little bit of fantasy, with the mecha, that'll kind of pull people in. And so yeah, I wish if nothing else, maybe the community can kind of keep kind of pushing and marketing it. But I do think that BattleTech survives over the years because, of the richness of the universe, and I kind of mentioned before that the lore and the novels is what kind of brings me in and ties me to it. And the effect of reading those in formative years, and learning as a, child of a single mom struggling to get by, reading about, honor and duty, and all that stuff. I mean, that has a big effect on a young kid. And that's why I'm here now talking about BattleTech, and I think that, stays with those people. And so as long as Catalyst keeps doing a great job putting out those novels, and, there's remains all these different vectors, whether, virtual world, whether it's tabletop, whether it's novels, whether it's, video games, MechWarrior Online, I think that the passion of the community coming from all those different angles, will help sustain it at whatever level, even if it's just a niche. It's like, maybe sometimes it'll be a niche for a long time and then it'll explode. And, as long as it explodes and comes back down and becomes a niche again, that'd be fine too.
Well, and this is a part of that magic. I mean, mm-hmm. It is a small community, but it's so incredibly tight, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody has place, right? I'm not a diehard gamer, right? But I absolutely love the universe and I love the aesthetic, and it has become a part of my life. I mean, it's the strangest thing to explain to other people. People have in my day-to-day life, people have absolutely no idea about this and what I do with this, but when I talk to somebody like you, right, you've come at it from a different angle. Like what fills your bucket, right, is not necessarily a cockpit or that experience. While you might think it's cool because you're invested in the universe, but you and I can still have a pretty passionate conversation about this world, even if we come at it from completely different angles. And how cool is that shared experience that we're barely even speaking the same language, but we can have a really great time. And that's why I love going to the conventions. It's infectious, being around people that just dig the same thing, and whether it be Disney or another IP, but there's kind of a coolness about, well, not everybody's in this club. Like, this club's pretty special. Like, oh, you didn't know that there's like over 100 novels for this? Yeah, of course. Where do you want to dig in? Oh,
yeah.
You're not a pen. You don't have patience for pen and paper. Well, want to try video game?
Yeah.
Oh, you're not a traditional video gamer. Want to hop in my cockpit? I've got 100 buttons in there and 12 speakers, and you can go in and blow up your friend in the other one. Doesn't that sound like a good time?
Yeah.
It always is. And now they will, in all likelihood, know the name BattleTech for the rest of their life because they are now a mech warrior. So yeah. Awesome. It's cool. It's so cool.
Definitely. Well, when things open back up, I'll do what I can to kind of steer people to wherever, the BattleTech pods, are kind of, making their home at that time, and, get people into that VR experience. I have never been in a virtual pod, so I will definitely bucket list for my future as well. But
well, I'm happy to say you will be able to. Mm-hmm. And where do you live?
I'm a little north of Boston, so right on the New Hampshire border of Massachusetts.
Well, what I think you should consider is that I will invite you to one of our well-known spring or fall events. We used to have a thing called Spring Invasion and a thing called Brocktoberfest. And we would have people come from as far as Japan and Germany to just come hang out at those events. They're completely, usually free. We usually host it wherever I've got my cockpits. Right now we're setting them up at another location in Grand Rapids, in Michigan. And, you know, hopefully we will be free and clear of our current pandemic. And by next fall, we will be fully established in our new location. It'll be post convention season by then, if there's conventions next year. And you should come out and bring some friends and come hang out in Michigan and have the, you know, most authentic actual BattleTech experience that you can have outside of, you know, North Pier Mall in Chicago.
Awesome. I'm pumped. I'm excited. I'll definitely take you up on that. Well, Nick, thanks a lot for, you know, connecting and talking and spreading the word about another way to kind of express that level of BattleTech. You know, it's always fun talking BattleTech.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity and letting us continue to tell our story. I look forward to talking with you more in the future.
Definitely. And before we sign off, let's give a list of any kind of ways that people connect with you online, you know, social media, so they know kind of where to follow a kind of virtual world and connect with the pods.
Sure. So, you know, first and foremost, you know, our official website for virtual world is mechjock.com, mechjock.com. Mm-hmm. It's a site that we try to keep updated with correct information. We try to cross-reference to other cockpit operators who, you know, kind of, you know, deal with their own marketing and logistics, but we really try to, you know, stay connected to them. But Facebook is really the place, good, bad, or otherwise. There is a virtual world group, virtual entertainment group on Facebook, and we've got a lot of people that have been around a long time kind of hanging out in that channel. And that's, you know, where we always put our most current information.
Awesome.
We do have a Twitter account. Virtual World does have an official Twitter account. It's just me. And, you know, we try to sneak some stuff in there every now and then too, that we don't put on the Facebook page or the website for a while. So try to give a little bit of incentive for, you know, kind of staying connected there as well.
Yeah. Awesome. And I'll put all those links down in the description for people to kind of connect with you there. But let's sign off there. You know, thanks a lot, Nick. And thanks for everyone for listening. And we'll catch you on the next episode.
Thank you very much.